audio courtesy of Cleveland.com. It started with a trade request. It has moved to declining extension talks. The only thing next would be an ultimatum. Anthony Lima and Tom Withers in for Ken Carman, a real journalist. Last week we were supposed to have, well, quasi-journalist in Jason Lloyd. We get a real journalist today in Tom Withers of Associated Press fame. You've seen him around town for the better part of, can I say 25 years? How long?
You can say 26 years.
26, I was close.
There you go.
I was close. Your biographers gave me some semi-accurate information. Tom, your first thoughts when we knew the Miles stuff wasn't great. There were some rumblings that maybe it's about the money. Maybe a guaranteed contract. Maybe make him the most expensive non-quarterback in the NFL and guarantee most of it. Maybe that'll do the trick. Maybe there's a means to the end for Myles Garrett. And yesterday, according to the reports, that got squashed in a big way.
Well, now we're at the tried and true negotiating in the media phase of this fight, right? And I don't know what the end game is here for either party. It's been real puzzling to me, Anthony, to see the way that Miles is kind of, you know, flip-flopped here over the last couple of months, right? He goes from, I'd like to retire as Brown. I love it in Cleveland. The fans love me, et cetera. I think we can turn this around.
They're not that far away.
Not that far away. The Hard Knocks interview, followed by the ultimatum, and now this negotiating and this leverage play that he's trying to make as what looks to be like an NBA-type play. You know, towards the end of the season, I'll be honest with you, when I heard that he had been consulting with LeBron, I thought, uh-oh, here it comes. And then sure enough, you know, a couple weeks later, we find out that he's made these kind of demands.
Yeah, not only that. The LeBron stuff scared a lot of people because the minute that and now he did say that he had made up his mind before talking to LeBron. People aren't going to believe that. I mean, people are going to think that, like, LeBron was in there planting the seed. No, what planted the seed was 3-14 in the middle or getting close to who knows where he is in his prime. It seems like he hit the way his body is. He should age gracefully in this game and be able to play a long time. But with that said, I mean, 8 years. 8 years you devote to an organization. I always ask fans, like, how many years do you think you deserve or are you owed when you draft a player? Because LeBron, I think, taught us years ago that, you know, 7 years, highs and lows, that's a good amount of time. We always wanted more with LeBron. But I think since then, the way that the leagues have evolved in free agency and how a lot of players in different sports have steered their way to different organizations.
Power.
Yeah. Feels like 8 years is at some point the team also needs to prove themselves to the player.
I'll give you that. I think the Browns have treated him well, though, also, right? I mean, and he has played at an unbelievable level the last 4 years. I think there's been some inconsistencies, early on where we wanted, hey, where's that Miles game-ending sack, right? Where is that moment where he actually steps up and becomes that kind of guy? We've seen that the last 2 or 3 years. I'll remind you, we also had that car accident a couple years ago, bit of a self-inflicted wound.
Yep, absolutely.
I will say that the Browns stood by him during the Mason Rudolph situation and the suspension, right? That's not to say that he hasn't been a good soldier. We've also heard whispers out of Berea that he may not be the leader that, you know, he espouses to be, right? He may not be exactly that guy. I've been told by some players in that locker room that there's times when Myles Garrett brings up his voice in the locker room and nobody really pays too much attention to it because he's kind of playing his own little game as well. He's a bit of a diva. Don't get me wrong. I like Myles a lot. I have a lot of respect for Myles as a person, as a player. I think he's done some great things for this community. But I think this power play, especially now in the media, here we are, unnamed anonymous sources, which I have a hard time with. If you're going to give me that story, how come you can't put your name on it? So we're going to have this back and forth.
And that's coming from you, well, who's used unnamed sources over the course of your career at times for background.
And you have to at times because you're forced into a situation where you need to get the news. But you also say to that source, why can't I put your name on it? And if you can't put your name on it, you better give me a good reason why. Otherwise, this is not going to go on the wire because we're not going to play this back and forth game doing your negotiating for your client, for your whoever. So it's in a bad situation now. I'm not surprised that the Browns are digging in their heels. They have no other choice at this point, right? They got to figure out a way. I thought it was interesting this week the way Andrew Berry framed it as, I'm not interested in moving Myles Garrett, digging in, right? Somebody's going to have to make him interested if this trade is going to happen, right? And somebody's going to have to put down some kind of a package in front of the Browns that they just can't refuse.
Well, not only that, Tom Withers in for Ken Carmen this morning. We got a loaded show for you. We've got plenty of football from the Combine. We've got Carl Dukes of the Infinity Sports Network at 8:20. Howard Beck of the Ringer at 9 o'clock. Four Cavaliers in the top 50 of their updated rankings, even though we found some more skepticism out there in radio land. We'll play some of that for you coming up. But Tom, you know, it was a few years ago. Was it 3 years ago that Jadeveon Clowney, when he walked out the door, started, you know, lobbing some things, I would say, you know, for Myles Garrett, considering how beloved he was in this town, unsavory things.
Casting aspersions.
Yeah, and we all took Myles' side. We're like, oh, Jadeveon Clowney's on a different team every year, rent a player. I have seen some people wonder, oh, was there something to that at this time? None of this. What I'm not going to do is just kick Myles out the door like he's garbage, like, oh, we're going to be better without him. We know that's not the case. I wonder, the Canton thing, it was weird to me, the terminology that bothered him so much. I thought that was fine. I didn't think that was that big of a deal. I understood what Barry was saying. But then Barry, the last time he talked on Monday, you know, that press conference, about 15 minutes at the Combine in Indy, you know, he said something again that I think might have rattled the camp of Myles a little bit, which was, you know, there's not a scenario, I can't envision a scenario where he is not a Cleveland Brown. Well, you have somebody who's saying, not only do you need to envision that scenario, you need to make it happen. And I wonder what that was going to be met with. And I think we found out, because it was just a day later, basically, that Myles is like, this is not about the money.
Yeah, he's swinging back.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, much like Super Bowl week when he went on, you know, Radio Row and did all those interviews, and much like this week where the NFL is all converged on Indianapolis, that's a platform, right, to get out however it is you feel about whatever subject it may be. So I don't know. I think things will calm down here over the next couple of weeks. I think this was a card that was necessary, to your point, Anthony, a card that the Garrett camp felt they needed to play to counter whatever Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski had thrown out from their side over the last couple of weeks. I still think, in my heart of hearts, I still think there's a way that they get this resolved, believe it or not. I still think there's
resolved.
I do. I think there's a situation in which the Browns make an offseason move or two that placate Garrett and make him happy enough to stay here. I think he genuinely does love it here. I think he wants to finish his career in Cleveland. I think that's a big part of what he wants to be in terms of his legacy. And I think if the Browns convince Myles that, okay, you know, we've made a trade for, let's say, this free eight or this veteran quarterback, okay, he's going to be our bridge quarterback for 2 years. We're going to take either Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders at number two. Here's the rest of our plans. I'm not so sure that the Browns laid out definitively step A, B, C, D, and E to Myles earlier in the offseason as to here's what we're going to do, because I'm not sure they knew what they were going to do.
I don't even know how you could.
How could you? Right.
That.
You haven't even seen, right? You haven't had the combine. You haven't sat down with Sanders. You haven't sat down with Ward. You haven't taken a look at the landscape to see who's going to be available and who's not. So I still think deep down that there's still a way that this can get fixed.
Owen, we found some optimism. We finally found somebody in Cleveland who's optimistic about the few. The grizzled veteran reporter is the guy that's optimistic. The stereotypes are all wrong. This is incredible.
That's what it took, huh? Yeah. Again, as I said before, I've got a great deal of respect for Myles. I kind of see where he's coming from. I also think that because he lived through the Joe Thomas final years and saw what that looked like for a Hall of Fame player, that maybe gave him a snapshot of what his future could look like if he decided, you know, to stand pat and not do things. Hey, bottom line, 3-14 and not having a quarterback is why we're here. Bottom line.
All right, 216-474-0092. You've heard me. You've heard Tom Withers. I like a fresh dose of optimism, because this has been an ugly week. It's been an ugly month for the Browns. When you think about from the Myles situation to, oh, by the way, Nick Chubb's going to be a free agent, and the way that they're talking, boy, I couldn't believe it. I thought at the very least that they'd be able to strike up something where he's not the guy in the running back room with the understanding, let's see what you got. No, they're basically like, no, he's going to pursue free agency. And boy, people around the league don't seem to think that he's coming back to the Browns. It's still early in the process. We'll see how healthy Nick Chubb is, whether he's even on a football team to start the year. you know, but that was just another blow. The JOK news. The JOK news, I mean, you can make an argument that's as big as anything, because if they don't have JOK, then Jim Schwartz doesn't have his defense. I mean, he is a linchpin in that defense.
Last year, I'll be honest with you, I thought last year he was playing better than anybody on the Browns before he got hurt. He was absolutely their top defensive player, ahead of Myles Garrett at the time of the injury. And now we don't know if his career's over or not.
Yeah, so it's been, you know, kind of this drip of, all right, wake us up when we have the draft. And now the draft, you've gotten a lot of wrenches thrown into that. Abdul Carter, the injury situation. People seem, you guys tell me if I'm wrong on this. It seems like Shador, his stock has gone down once everybody convened in Indy. Because you kept hearing in the lead up, well, he doesn't have the physical traits, but he can do this, this, and this, you know, adequately well. And it just feels like, even though he's not throwing, everybody kind of got together in Indy and has a similar story. Like, hey, he's you know, an accurate passer from the pocket, but after that, here's where it goes wrong. Then, all right, Cam Ward. Can I get Cam Ward? And is that going to make sense if Abdul Carter is the guy that goes number one in Tennessee, or is Tennessee going to trade out? So there's a lot of mystery in the air. Browns are sitting at number two, which I do think is a fortuitous spot to be in, despite all of the noise around this. What is your sense right now, Tom? Because you said you think there is a way that if everything went a certain way, that maybe Miles would be intrigued.
Yeah, and I don't want to throw another cold bucket of water at things, but, and this one is close to the heart, is Joel Bitonio's situation, right? We're, you know, borderline Hall of Fame offensive guard who may not be coming back. So, yeah, this happens frequently, Anthony. These combines, this is what happens, right? The league gathers. Suddenly they start dissecting players. Everybody's trying to figure out, like you said, you know, the deep mysteries and depths of this draft. This is a fascinating draft, I think, just because you have so many teams towards the top, as you always do, that are in dire need of a quarterback, the Browns being at the top of that list, right? You have a player in Abdul Carter who people are starting to talk about as a generational type of edge rusher, much in the Myles Garrett, you know, realm. So, yeah, there's a lot that goes on here. And I'm with you. I think it's gone from, okay, all these connections, you know, whether it's, Shador playing Madden with the Browns or whatever the case may be. There were all these connections going in. And now it feels like it's flipped to the other side, and it's suddenly like Cam Ward seems to be the guy. So I think there's still a lot that can happen here. I think, you know, we can get into this, but, you know, in my mind, the Browns have to take a quarterback in number two. I don't think there's any way around it. I think they have to fall in love with one of those two guys. It's rare you're in this situation. They've spent the last 75 years looking for a franchise quarterback. When you have the opportunity to get one of the top two with the number two pick, I think you've got to do it.
I've been with you all along. I think I've been thinking, assuming that Cam Ward was not going to be there at one, so I assumed it would be Shador Sanders. I guess there's a lot of silliness going on, so we don't really know what to make of any of this. I still see there are plenty of guys that do have, you know, first-round grades for both Shador and Cam Ward. Now, we can debate, well, where in the first round? But does it matter when you don't have a quarterback? Does it matter? Are you going to try to thread the needle and trade down and still get the quarterback that you like? You know, we have Brian Hoyer on a couple of times. We're going to have him on, you know, every week in the lead up to the draft on Tuesdays. And Hoyer, he doesn't want either of these guys. And he's fine with the Browns taking a quarterback with that very coveted first pick of the second round. But that's tough again. What if your guy's not around? We're just punting on the decision for a year. So there's a lot that goes into it.
Now the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
Hearing from some more players yesterday at the NFL Scouting Combine out in Indianapolis, which, by the way, I believe we'll be hearing from the quarterbacks Cam Ward and Shador Sanders later this morning from Indy, as well as Jalen Milroe. As for yesterday, we had Travis Hunter on the podium.
Should we carry the Milroe press conference live? So many Milroe fans here in Northeast Ohio. Call up Ken Carmen. Let him know, hey, we're carrying the Milroe, future Browns quarterback.
It could be a possibility whether or not they choose him come late April. They also might go with the guy I just mentioned in Travis Hunter, who yesterday said he modeled his receiving game after a current Cleveland Browns wideout.
I used to watch a lot of Jerry Jeudy because he's from Florida and I'm from Florida, so I kind of copy his movements a lot. But other than that, there's really no other player that I style my game after.
I said, Tom, if you haven't caught the show all week, shame on you. But if you haven't, I I don't understand the Travis Hunter trying to play both ways. It's from a fan perspective, awesome. Like, I want to see more Deion Sanders, guys who want to try different things. It would be awesome. From a team perspective, we've had so many guys. I remember Rodney McLeod was like, how's he going to be in the meetings all week? How is he going to have the scouting report, especially defensively? You've got to be dialed in to who you're covering and all of their pet moves and some of their wily tricks as veterans. Like, you're not going to be doing that if you're in the offensive meetings getting ready for all your responsibilities.
You're not playing Colorado State on Sunday. Right. Right? I hear you.
Right. So, yeah. You know, I've heard varying people say that he's either defense first or offense first. And I'm like, if he's not going to be elite at either, then I'm not going to take him at two. Like, to take that position at two, and, you know, wide receiver, like I said this, I thought maybe he was the third or fourth best wide receiver in college football last year. So I'm taking him at two and making him a wide receiver. That doesn't make sense to me.
Not for this Browns team. While he fills a couple of needs, and it would be interesting, and wouldn't it be nice to have something positive to write and talk about in this town, right? And optimistic about a player and his future on the football field. Not doable, right? I do think, though, there might be a way where you could use him, start him on defense, and then have a package of plays for him on offense. But I agree with you. I think McLeod hits it right on the nose, and he knows better than anybody else, right? You've got to be in those meetings. You've got to be locked in. The kid is a phenomenal talent. There's no question about it. But this is not, you know, I mean, Charles Woodson maybe was the last player that we saw do this at a high level successfully. Before that, I don't know. Jim Thorpe. You have to go back a little bit.
You know, New England, we get very creative during various parts of their run, and Troy Brown was doing different things. But again,
Mike Vrabel was doing some different things.
Mike Vrabel was too, but none of these guys were making it their identity.
Not play after play. Yeah.
All right, another player we heard from yesterday's combine was Michigan's Mason Graham, obviously a serious threat on the Wolverines' defensive line over the last couple of seasons. And he was asked about the feeling of leaving Ohio Stadium this past fall, winner with a victory against the Buckeyes, and whether or not he believed that they still had a bit of it in them.
So you guys left Ohio Stadium, did you think Ohio State would go on and win the championship?
I mean, I knew they were probably one of the better teams. You know, it hurts me to say that, but I knew they were one of the better teams, and, you know, I had a shot if they got in there, yeah.
I love the fact, I'll just say this. First of all, it's great to have an actual Ohio State fan sitting across from me. Not somebody who I think cheers for the most part for the maize and blue. It's so great to have, and not, you know, a Michigan hater, not a Michigan fan, in this chair. Tom Withers, I'm so happy you're with me today. Because Mason Graham, who I've said I actually think might be the safest pick in the draft. Like, I think he's a safer pick than Abdul Carter.
Absolute
I've said that.
Beast. Yeah.
I know it's not sexy to have just a guy clogging the lanes on the inside. I think he's going to be a really good NFL player. But I love the fact he's getting asked Ohio State questions at the combine. That is the beauty of when you go and win the national championship. Michigan thought they had all the last words. They thought it was over. Well, I might have thought it was over too. I might have prematurely said some bad things about Ohio State at the time. But, you know, Ohio State went on a nice run after that, and now all these Michigan players have to be confronted with it.
Who could have imagined that losing to Michigan would be the best thing that ever happened to Ohio State? I'm not so sure they win the national championship if they win that game, right?
Yeah, imagine a close win. You know, are they reevaluating everything that they do if they just beat Michigan in a close game?
Right, and then what does a matchup against Oregon in the Big Ten title game look like? Anyway, we can revision history to death, but I'm with you. It's nice to hear Michigan guys have to talk about a Buckeye championship.
And by the way,
it's good for the soul.
Think about where Will Howard's stock was the day after the Michigan game, and now today, where that stock is.
Made more money than anybody else in college football.
Great point.
No doubt about it.
Well, speaking of players at the NFL Combine, they're not the only ones making the headlines. As yesterday, a lot of sports media had a bit of fun with the story that we kind of covered yesterday, the spat between Jordan Schultz and Ian Rappaport at a hotel Starbucks. I was looking it up, which makes it even funnier.
JW Marriott, famous grounds over there in Indianapolis.
That makes it funnier because there's no four walls to contain that entire fight, really. So yesterday, I mean, Pat McAfee had a whole thing. Inside the NBA guys had a whole thing about it at the beginning of their show. But this was Rappaport being introduced on NFL Network during their extensive coverage of the Combine.
There is one other member of our broadcast team we've got to bring in, and he is the Jake Paul of NFL Network. Lots of buzz. He's trending with no punches thrown. Ian Rappaport.
Thank you, Rich. I would say I'm.
He looks a little under-caffeinated, actually, to be honest.
No, I'm properly caffeinated. A lot of great coffee brands. Dunkin' does a really nice job. Nice. He actually is a fantastic coffee. I could go on and on about the coffee brands that I love.
I would have loved, and we talked about this yesterday, I would have loved for one time, just let it fly. Tom, when's the last fight you got in?
Throw a punch?
Yeah, when's the last fight? I know we're supposed to be adults, we're supposed to be grown men, but there is a way to get any of us grown men to actually throw a punch. I think my fighting days are over, but there are circumstances where I could see me losing my mind and doing something pretty stupid and probably jeopardizing my career, maybe my family. I don't know, but it's in there. It is in there. Tom, you've been feisty at times.
You got that Italian blood in you. Sure, it gets boiling every once in a while. I got you.
You've been feisty at times during your career.
I had a feisty few years in the 80s. I used to work the door of a bar on Long Island called the Copper Kettle. And I used to just have to check IDs. And we had a couple barroom brawls that I had to get into the middle of and had to try to play peacemaker at first until somebody hit me in the head, and then
you're
it's
always
on.
Gonna right? get sucker punched.
It happens.
I'm taking Jordan
taken
Schultz.
You
in this.
As more of the cooler, Tom.
this is an amazing story because I think people are bored, and you know, not a lot, the blue chippers aren't there at this draft, so we're gonna make some headlines of our own. The original story that they're disputing, this Matt Stafford, Tom Brady, like people are forgetting the genesis of the story, and these two had different versions of the same story. And Ian was very, in his tweet, is very condescending to Jordan Schultz. Basically, like, you stay in your newsmaker lane, I'm in my newsmaker lane. Like, we have our newsmaker power rankings right now in the NFL.
Well, of course we do.
I think we do. Tom, we have music that accompanies this. Every time we go to a power ranking, feel free to enjoy.
I love it.
Launching yourself into a power ranking at some point today. Obviously, number one in the NFL is going to be Adam Schefter.
Right.
Number two, I think Ian Rappaport is always battling for that number two spot. Do you think he's good at number two? Or do you think he thinks there's a world where he can catch Schefter at some point? Because I'm not buying it.
As any good newsmaker, you're always striving to be number one. I think he thinks there's opportunity and maybe squashing news that he didn't feel was actual news was how he made it his jump into number one.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I just know, like, in the NBA, Shams, he caught Woj. Like, he was right there hand in hand.
Yes.
He drove him into retirement. That's how impressive it was. I mean, now you got Woj working at Olean New York, helping out college kids at St. Bonaventure.
Hey, be nice to St. Bonnie.
Selling his phones.
Yeah, you know, media on media crime is never a good thing, right?
I don't know what
is the origin of this coffee house fight?
Somebody
jumped somebody in the line or what?
No, it was that Schultz had a story that there could be some conspiring behind the scenes with the Raiders and Matt Stafford.
Oh, I got you.
And then Rappaport says, unlike some previous reports, yes, those two were there at this resort in Montana. Coincidentally, at the same time. Now, it is a ski resort to the stars. A lot of multimillionaires out there in Montana hang out there. But he's like, it had nothing to do with that. And so, obviously, Jordan took offense to that, and the two went at it.
And finally, we go out to Arizona, where the Guardians are. I know it's spring training right now. Guardians are 1-5 in spring training. It's such a weird thing, and you're losing to the White
Sophomore
Sox.
Sophomore slump for Vogt.
The White Sox of all teams. The White Sox are going to win like 30 games this year again somehow. But the story that I wanted to get to, Tristan McKenzie yesterday in relief. One hit, 3 earned runs, 0 strikeouts, 5 walks in 2/3, not 2 innings, 2/3 of an inning. It's been a tough spring so far.
Push the panic button already.
Yeah, I know.
We're still in February.
He has velocity. He's just not spotting the ball.
I'm gonna have to target payroll
outside of the strike zone.
The payroll. I got to hammer the payroll now for spring training losses. No, I'm not worried, Tristan. Yeah, I mean, I'm a little. You're watching Tristan specifically because you feel like you have the makings yet again of a really good rotation. And Tristan, I mean, we've been on this journey. What has it been, 5 years?
Yeah. Yeah. Should I get surgery? Should I not? Mm-hmm. Should I shut it down? Should I not? I'll fall back on this, Mitch, in the I was working on things category from yesterday. I wouldn't panic too much. He could have been working on specific pitches, what have you. That's a common thing at training camp. So sure. I wouldn't worry yet. As long as the velocity looks okay, you know, you talk about the spin rates, the things like that. We don't know exactly what he was throwing, so I wouldn't worry yet. But I'm with you, Anthony. This has been dragging on for a long time now. It's like, is Tristan McKenzie going to become that guy? Can he be that legitimate top of the rotation, six innings every time out kind of guy? Because that's what the Guardians need.
I'm still not ready to throw in the towel on this. And obviously they're not either. No, and there's no reason them to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just feel like at some point he's going to get back to the guy we're all hoping he could be.
And unfortunately with his situation, emotion kind of plays into it because he's such a likable guy. And everybody in the organization is just pulling for him. And I know the fans love him as well. So hope for a better day next time out, Mitch.
You are making me feel a little bit better. That's it for About Last Night.
All right, that was Myles Garrett on the Rich Eisen Show. Was that during Super Bowl week?
Correct.
Well, now we're at the Combine. And he did say in that clip, it's not about the money. He also said it's not about the record. And then he said it's not about anything, basically. It's like, well, it has to be about something.
He also said whichever city you're in.
Right, yeah. Right. So
he's all over the place.
Yeah, that was Myles then, and he was making the rounds. I remember at the time, I made note that, hey, he didn't attack Cleveland. He didn't really attack the organization. He was just like, we're not really on the same page. I want to win now. He's basically saying, I don't think you guys are going to win.
It was very LeBron-esque, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah, he was covering his bases.
100%.
Plausible deniability. He didn't want to seem like the bad guy. And it was crazy, Tom, in the history of us doing radio in this town or on this station, and I've been listening my whole life to Cleveland radio, I had never heard fans like they were the day after he came out with his press release. I had never heard fans stick up for the player.
More supportive. Yeah, I agree with you.
Especially the loyal yeah. Browns fans.
Yeah.
Now, that some of that's eroded.
It has, because he went on Radio Row and spent the week kind of disparaging, not disparaging the organization, but certainly talking down and talking bad about, you know, what was happening here.
Well, it just feels, and I guess I'd ask the question, 216-474-0092, because I want to talk about leverage and get into that, because he's doing a very NBA move. But today, I want to ask Browns fans, does Myles Garrett still feel like a Brown to you? Everybody was vouching for him the day after, and now, when I say it's eroded, I've seen, granted, a lot of it's on social media, but even when I'm texting with my buddies, I've seen some people kind of jump to the finish line with him. Now, they're not burning his jersey yet. I haven't seen anything like that. But I have seen a bunch of people say, yeah, you know, we thought you were one of us. Now, you're no longer one of us when you continue, you know, this discussion. Now, yesterday, it was the report from Mary Kay that it's over, that it's not about the money. There's going to be no more negotiation. It's not about a contract extension. So that was what he could do to volley this back to the Browns. But you right now, Tom, I mean, you're still in the media space, but you're also a fan. Does Myles Garrett feel like a Brown to you?
Yes, but barely. I'm really interested to see when he makes his next, you know, public appearance here. I'm kind of waiting for that moment where he's courtside at a Cavs game and I can stalk him and track him down at halftime and find out exactly what's going on. So
it's kind of noteworthy. He has not been
back. Has not been there. No,
as a minority owner of the franchise.
Yeah, he's letting his side play out these negotiations in the media, which is I think is always a dangerous move. In terms of the leverage, you know, from the get-go, Anthony, I was a little surprised that he would be so public with this because he was almost hurting the Browns' chances to move him by establishing that there's this conflict there, right? And I don't think it looks good in terms of his legacy to him to come across this way. I think from a PR standpoint, to your point, he's taken a hit here. I think there was some initial support, but I think that has eroded to a degree. And, you know, we'll see what's next. I don't know what the next right-hand move in this story is, but certainly one is coming. And I think it would have to be when we find out who's making offers for him and what's on the table in front of the Browns. And if they're not taking it, why not?
I have said all along, I would prefer the prime time, the premier draft picks in next year's draft, not this year. And a lot of these deals that I keep hearing with, man, the Buffalo Bills, the Philadelphia Eagles, like I don't... To me, if I'm an Eagles fan, yeah, it'd be great to have Myles Garrett, but you just won a Super Bowl because of your strength in numbers, kind of like the old Golden State Warriors.
Right.
You had so many guys. The minute you go get Myles Garrett, you know, A, you're making a trade. So
Kevin Durant,
gonna,
right?
Yeah.
Same kind of, yeah.
Right, so you're not even going to lose draft picks. And even though they're at the end of the first round, in the NFL you can get plenty of good players at the end of the first round, you're now deviating away from what your ability, what your advantage over everybody was just because you want one dominant player. Like, I don't think the Eagles make sense at all.
Let me ask you this from a Browns standpoint. What's your starting point? What gets the phone call through? What do you have to get right off the bat?
Is it
two first-round picks?
Well, yes.
Minimum, right?
Without a doubt. Now, here's the interesting one. Like, the Bears have, you know, a top selection in this year's draft, and you're betting that the Bears will be bad again, you know, even with Myles Garrett, that they're not necessarily going to solve everything. So you could get a first-round pick next year that still would hopefully be in the top third of the league, top half of the league. Like, that's pretty good. It's going to be hard for the Cavs, especially with Miles attempting to call his shot. Like, I only want to go, and he's mentioning Jaden Daniels. Yeah. All right, well, they were just in the NFC Championship game. What good does that do the Browns, a pick like that? And you would think Washington, especially in the NFC, they're going to be good again next year.
Right, which is why I think you are the Browns. You just, you dig in and you ask for as much as you can possibly get your hands on. So did you said you would want the picks, not for this year, but for going forward, for 26 and beyond?
Yes. You definitely have to look towards the future on something like this.
Could Myles Garrett get you your franchise quarterback via trade?
I'm hesitant to go that way because, like, do you think Matt Stafford? Are you thinking, like, in a Matt Stafford deal?
No, or? I'm thinking you got to get a much younger, right, kind of proven. I'm trying to think of...
So who is that guy that gives you...
Justin Herbert type?
I can't imagine, like, Harbaugh came out of college to go coach that dude.
I think Harbaugh would trade for J.J. McCarthy tomorrow.
So you think... Well, then now you're talking about a very fluid situation.
Yeah, I think there are several of those, to be honest with you, around the league, Anthony. I think there's a scenario by which the Browns could land one of those kind of guys.
Hard part is, okay, great, I have Herbert. Now I don't have Myles Garrett.
Right.
And
so we're starting over there, yeah.
Herbert, without a great defense, and even with some of the premier pass rushers he's had, still has not been able to really win. So where does that get you where you're staring at Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow in your division, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes? That's the hard part about it. Makes it interesting. Like, now you got a quarterback that can actually play the game, can play the sport, and you feel formidable. You feel like he can go toe-to-toe with all those guys. But over the course of a season, man, it stinks that you had the formula. You had the pass rusher. You had the loaded team.
Exactly.
You had the running back.
You had the running game, right?
Yeah. 216-474-0092. Let me think about that a little bit. You've got me on my toes a little bit. Cool Ray in Bedford. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up? Good morning, fellas. I'm going to try to make this quick, but I got a lot of information. Like, first, I'm a Browns fan. I'm 52. So I've been there since, you know, Brian Sipe. This Myles Garrett does feel like a Browns to me. This organization doesn't feel like the same organization I watched growing up. So that's the problem. Now, Myles Garrett has all the leverage here. People just don't see it. All of it. And when fans say he has none, they don't know what it's like to be an athlete. I do. Like, Myles Garrett, the only leverage the Browns have, they don't have to trade him. But they have to pay him. Like, if once the new season starts, if they don't trade him, once the new season starts, they have to give him his roster bonus. Then he can go, you know what, I was playing injured on this, a bad Achilles and his bad foot. I'm going to start having now doctors evaluate. So now I'm going to go through 8, 9, 10 different doctors to tell me what I need. And then when I hear, okay, you know what, let's start having surgery. Then I'm going to go to surgery. Then
do you think he is willing to do that? Do you think he's that type of guy? Remember, Kyrie threatened the knee situation, which forced the hand of Dan Gilbert. In this case.
You know what? Absolutely. Because here it is. You guys are all, and every some of these fans are assuming that he wants to leave because of a quarterback. What is the one position you can't get in the draft? That's a coach. If Myles Garrett is actually worried about a young quarterback coming in, he would be here. He don't want to be here because he doesn't believe in the coach. And we've been saying it for years, and now that when that report came out and the players rated their coach and their team, We all see it. We just don't know what's actually going on, and it doesn't really matter.
So you think, Corey, if they would have said, we are firing after 3-14, we're firing Stefanski and we're elevating Mike Vrabel to head coach.
And Myles Garrett will be here. And I'm going to do something better for you. I'm about to give y'all a guarantee. You don't got to worry about Shedeur Sanders or the other top quarterback. I guarantee you they won't get the Browns. Because what's going on behind the scenes is that nobody, and I know you guys love Stefanski, this guy is not a quarterback whisperer. I'm surprised that nobody on this station has thought about it. We have been through, 22 quarterbacks?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I thought he was going to start. I'm sorry. So I thought he was going to start listing off the quarterbacks. Tom, do you love Stefanski? Do you love Stefanski? I like him.
I like him a lot.
And I'm not in love with him.
No.
I think there are better coaches in the league.
To that gala, you know.
I do want to go to the gala again. It was a great fundraising effort over the summer. I think there are coaches I'd rather have over him. I'd like McVay. I'd like Shanahan. You know, there are guys.
You do list constantly coaches that you like more than
yeah.
Kevin Stefanski.
But I like Stefanski a lot more than some other coach. So
he got graded as a C by the players, yeah. Right? Which tells you he probably got a few A's and a couple of D minuses and F's thrown in there, right? And it kind of balanced out. I'll tell you guys this, and I'll tell Cool Ray this. When I talk to players in the locker room that I can trust, and I can talk to them on the side, and I ask them whether or not they believe in Kevin Stefanski, it is a resounding yes. And I'm talking about veteran players, young guys, everything in between. And so when I hear that from players, that's all I can go on, right? I'm not in the meetings with the guy. I don't know what kind of a leader of men he is. I've seen what he's put on the football field, and at times it's been a little bit wonky, to say the very least, right? The penalties last year, the pre-snap stuff.
It's bad last
that was
year.
All. It was inexcusable, right? There's also, they've had some terrible luck. I've also seen him start and win with 5 different quarterbacks, including a veteran who came off of his couch and took the team to the playoffs. So when you talk about quarterback whisperers, what exactly are you talking about there? I think he's good at developing young players. I think his staff has been good at developing young players. Whether they've picked the right players or not, that's a whole other argument.